This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, this is Julianne with the March 1, 2024 edition of The Week Junior. And as always, we'll start with the week's big news. The first article is 2 years of war in Ukraine. February 24 marked 2 years since Russia invaded Ukraine, sparking a war between the neighboring countries. As the fighting continued, the U.S. debated whether to provide further assistance to Ukraine. How has the war progressed? In its initial invasion, Russia fired dozens of missiles across Ukraine. Within weeks, Russia controlled large sections of the nation. Ukraine mounted a strong defense, however, and Russia failed to seize the nation's capital city, Kyiv. By November, Ukraine had pushed back Russian forces and recaptured 54% of its seized land. Fighting continued in 2023 with little progress for either nation. Currently, Russia controls about 18% of Ukraine. About 500,000 troops from both sides have been killed, and about 27,150 civilians have been killed or injured. About 6.2 million Ukrainians have fled the country, and 5.1 million others have moved within the nation to escape the fighting. Why did Russia invade Ukraine? Russia's President Vladimir Putin believes Ukraine is part of his country. Both nations were once part of the Soviet Union, which was a group of 15 countries run by Russia from 1922 to 1991. As the Soviet Union was collapsing, Ukraine declared its independence, but Putin never accepted this and has tried several times to take over parts of Ukraine. Putin also wants to prevent Ukraine from strengthening its relations with the U.S. and other countries in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, which is a military alliance of 31 nations. NATO was created, in part, to keep peace in Europe, but Putin views it as a threat to Russia. What is the status of the conflict? Ukraine and Russia are exchanging fire in Luhansk and Donetsk, two regions in eastern Ukraine where much of the fighting has taken place. On February 17, Russia took control of Advika, a city in Donetsk that is a key strategic location in the region. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, said Ukraine's troops lost the city because their supply of ammunition and other military equipment was low. He called on the U.S. and other nations for more help. Putin said he wants to negotiate a stop to the fighting in exchange for keeping some of Ukraine. But Ukraine and its allies have said they will never accept an agreement that involves giving up part of the country. How are other countries involved? Since January 2022, Ukraine has received almost $350 billion in aid from its allies, including more than $75 billion from the U.S., which has been Ukraine's top supporter. On February 16, Germany, which is Ukraine's second largest supporter, announced that it would provide a new $1.2 billion package of military aid. France was set to announce a similar agreement, and the UK had committed to long-term help. In February, European leaders agreed to create a fund of about $54 billion for Ukraine through the end of 2027. What will happen next? The loss of Avdiivka was a strategic and symbolic blow to Ukrainians, who had held off Russian forces there for months. The victory gave Russia momentum, as well as openings to advance further into the country. Zelensky renewed his call for American support. When The Week Junior went to press, President Joe Biden said $60 billion in military aid would be sent to Ukraine soon. On February 13, the U.S. Senate, which is half of the Congress, the branch of government that makes laws, passed a bill approving the aid. However, the legislation then moved to the House of Representatives, the other half of Congress, where it is not clear whether it will pass. Congress went on break on February 16 and is set to return on February 28. And the information bubble is, did you know? After Russia, Ukraine is the second largest country in Europe with a population of nearly 43 million people. And the sidebar is Ambulances for Ukraine. An aid group will mark the war's second anniversary by sending its 10th shipment of emergency vehicles to Ukraine. U.S. Ambulances for Ukraine will send 5 ambulances, a fire department SUV, a pickup truck, and a wheelchair-accessible bus. In total, they have provided 75 vehicles, including 52 ambulances. The next article is about Leap Day occurring in 2024. The year 2024 is a leap year, which means it will have 366 days as opposed to the typical number of 365 days in a year. The extra day, called Leap Day, will be February 29. Leap years take place every 4 years, with some exceptions, and get their name from the idea that they make us leap over a day of the week. In typical years, if your birthday was on a Monday 1 year, it would be on a Tuesday the following year. However, if your birthday were on a Monday and the following year was a leap year, then your birthday would leap over Tuesday and fall on a Wednesday. Leap years were established in 46 BCE by the Roman leader Julius Caesar. He created the Julian calendar, which called for a leap day every 4 years to make sure the calendar continued to match up with the seasons. In 1582, the Julian calendar was replaced by the Gregorian calendar, which is used by most of the world today and also includes leap years. The Gregorian calendar is based on Earth's movement around the Sun, but Earth's yearly orbit does not take an exact 365 days. Instead, Earth's orbit is 365 days and nearly 6 hours, so a leap day is added to account for those extra hours. Without leap years, the Gregorian calendar and Earth's orbit would not line up correctly over time, and neither would the calendar and the seasons of the year. In 100 years, they would be off by 25 days. After about 700 years, summers would start in December. And the information bubble is fun fact. Around the world, there are about 5 million people who were born on February 29, and they're sometimes called leaplings. Now we learn that Charles Darwin's library is open to all. The extensive personal library of famed scientist Charles Darwin has been digitally recreated for the first time since his death in 1882. The Complete Library of Charles Darwin, which is free to the public online, was released on February 12, the 215th anniversary of his birth. It holds more than 13,000 items, including a wide variety of books, pamphlets, and journals he used in his work. Darwin, born in 1809, was a British biologist and naturalist who changed how people understood the natural world. He is best known for his theory of evolution, which explained how animals or plants change over time. Darwin kept a detailed catalog of his collection of materials, which were in many languages and covered a wide variety of topics, including philosophy, religion, farming, and art. After his death, most of the items were lost or misplaced, but in 2007, a team of researchers and scientists used Darwin's list to begin rebuilding it. The library gives people access to his sources and a glimpse of who he was as a person. You can explore it at tinyurl.com/twjus-darwin-library. The word of the week this week is ambulance, A-M-B-U-L-A-N-C-E. The first ambulances were mobile hospitals that followed an army from place to place. Later on, the word was used for a cart that carried wounded soldiers off the battlefield in order to receive medical treatment. Ambulance itself is based on the French hôpital ambulant, which means walking hospital. In this week in history, on March 1, 1961, President John F. Kennedy established the Peace Corps, a U.S. agency that trains young Americans to serve in countries around the world. The volunteers live with the people in a community and assist with their development efforts. Within 2 years, 7,000 Americans had volunteered in 44 countries. Today, more than 240,000 people have served in the Peace Corps in 141 countries. Now we move to the animals and environment section, where we ask the question, can you refreeze the Arctic? Scientists from the UK recently visited the Arctic, the northernmost region of Earth, to test out a method of refreezing its ice. The Arctic is extremely cold, but the ice is melting due to global warming. Over the past 30 years, the oldest and thickest parts have shrunk by as much as 95%. This is a concern because the melting ice causes sea levels to rise. It also makes the planet warmer because the dark water absorbs the sun's heat, whereas the white ice reflects it back into space. In January, a research team traveled to Cambridge Bay in Arctic Canada. They cut a hole in the ice and used a pump to bring seawater from under the ice up to the surface. This water spread out across the ice and froze, replacing the snow that usually lies there. Having a fresh layer of ice rather than snow on top reduces the temperature of the ice. It also causes the seawater under it to freeze faster, making the ice thicker by natural means too. The pump used by the scientist is powered by green hydrogen, a gas produced using renewable energy, which is a type of energy that is created by nature and does not run out. This limits the environmental impact of the study. The plan is for people who live in the region to measure the thickness of ice over several weeks. The team hopes to add about 3 feet of ice in order to stop it from melting completely during the summer. Even if the idea works and the ice gets thicker, it could still take about 10 million pumps to reverse the melting ice all over the Arctic. That's a lot of pumps, but it's not absolutely out of this world, said Sean Fitzgerald from the University of Cambridge, which was involved in the expedition. Experts are exploring other ideas too. One involves sprinkling powder over the ice to reflect the sun's rays back, which could reduce heat and the rate of melting. Another project would install underwater curtains in front of glaciers to protect them from being melted by warm seawater. The information bubble is Did You Know? In 1958, a U.S. submarine sailed under the North Pole, proving that the region is ice floating on water. And the sidebar is Rare Penguin Spotted. In Antarctica, a very pale Gentoo penguin has been seen waddling around. The female bird has a rare condition called leucism, which means it is missing pigment, which is a substance that produces color, in parts of its body. Typically, Gentoo penguins have black heads with white patches around their eyes. The next article is Goats Become Night Feeders. New research has revealed that alpine ibexes, a species of mountain goat, are changing how they graze for food because of climate change. Known to be expert climbers in daylight, ibexes are now going out on steep, rough ground at night. Alpine ibexes live high up on the slopes of the Alps mountain range, which covers part of Austria, France, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland. They usually feed on grass, flowers, twigs, and moss during the day. A team of researchers studied alpine ibexes in two national parks from 2006 to 2019. They found when the days were very warm, the animals were more likely to be active during the night. This could be an energy-saving strategy, since the air temperatures are lower at night and cooling down uses a large amount of energy. The researchers noted that going out at night could put the goats in danger from a major predator, wolves, which are most active at night or in low light. The ibexes might also find that gathering food is more difficult because, unlike wolves, their eyes are not well adapted to seeing in the dark. The animal of the week this week is the numbat, N-U-M-B-A-T. Researchers believe rising temperatures in Australia may put numbats at risk of overheating because their fur absorbs the sun's heat. Experts have suggested moving the animals, also called banded anteaters, to cooler and shadier areas. They live up to 5 years in eucalypt forests in Australia. They grow nearly 10 inches long by eating termites. And the fun fact is, numbats collect termites using their sticky tongues, which are up to 4 inches long. The Ask an Expert question is, why are some birds fluffy when they hatch and other birds aren't? Birds have different strategies to avoid nest predators. Precocial species, such as chickens, spend more time developing in the egg. When they hatch, they're fluffy and can see and walk. Altricial young, such as sparrows, spend less time in the egg and hatch helpless, eyes closed and naked. In science and technology, opinions on vegetables influence others. It is well established that eating vegetables is good for us. Why then do some people like them, but others don't? A new study has found that other people's likes and dislikes could play a part. According to the research, people who eat vegetables and show an obvious distaste for them can influence others. A team of scientists in the UK set out to investigate how the facial expressions people make as they eat affect a person watching them. They asked more than 200 young women to watch videos of other adults eating raw broccoli. The people in the videos had different expressions while eating. They would smile, seem neutral, or neither happy nor sad, or look disgusted by what they were tasting. The study found that participants who watched someone else react with disgust while eating broccoli began to like broccoli less. The opposite was not true, however. When someone had a positive facial expression while eating broccoli, people watching them did not end up liking broccoli more. Humans learn which behaviors, including eating, will benefit them by watching the reaction of others. Known as social modeling, this tendency can have a strong influence on people's eating habits. Scientists believe that people might avoid food that appears disgusting because it could help protect them from eating something that tastes bad or could even be dangerous. Although the research focused only on adults, experts think the results could also apply to children. This means that if children see their parents or siblings not enjoying certain foods, including vegetables, they might not want to eat them either. A previous study found that children between the ages of 4 and 6 were more likely to eat broccoli if they had seen video clips of adults enjoying it. The team said further research is needed to determine how other people's facial expressions affect not only how much people like a vegetable, but also how much of it they choose to eat. They also hope to understand about how the behavior of adults influences children's enjoyment of food. This could help experts find ways to encourage young people to eat more of the foods that are healthy for them. The information bubble is flower power. Broccoli, which belongs to the cabbage family, is made up of clusters of many tiny green flower buds. And the sidebar is fruits versus veggies. Fruit is the product of a plant or tree that contains a seed. This includes apples, pears, strawberries, cucumbers, tomatoes, peppers, and pumpkins. A vegetable is any edible part of a plant that isn't a fruit. This includes leaves like spinach and lettuce, roots like carrots and turnips, and bulbs like onion. Legumes like beans, lentils, and peas are also vegetables. Mushrooms, meanwhile, are neither a fruit nor a vegetable. They're a fungus. Despite these definitions, food experts say that people often define a fruit or vegetable by taste. For example, most people think of fruits as sweet and vegetables as savory, which means salty or spicy. That's why they often treat tomatoes and avocados like vegetables, even though they are technically considered fruit. And now, a boy regains hearing through gene therapy. Assam Dam, an 11-year-old boy from Morocco who was born deaf, has now limited hearing thanks to an experimental technique called gene therapy. Genes are short sections of DNA, which are chemical instructions in the body. Assam's form of deafness is rare. It is caused by a problem with a gene called otoferlin that prevents sounds from being sent to his brain. Doctors at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia injected working otoferlin genes into Assam's cochlea, a snail-shaped organ in the inner ear. After the treatment, Assam could hear muffled sounds for the first time, and his hearing is now considered only mildly impaired. Other experiments with this type of gene therapy conducted in China have shown success, and similar trials are underway in Europe. Many children with inherited deafness are not eligible for gene therapy treatment, and some members of the deaf community disagree with the idea that being deaf is a condition that needs to be cured. Doctors will still try to help more patients in the future and hope their work will inspire more types of gene therapy for treating deafness. Assam, meanwhile, is pleased with the results. Using sign language, he told the New York Times, "There's no sound I don't like. They're all good." His favorite sounds, though, are people. And the information bubble is, did you know? More than 430 million people worldwide, including about 34 million children, have some degree of hearing loss. And now we'll move on to sports, where we learn that Caitlin Clark breaks basketball record. February 15 was a historic day in basketball. In front of a sold-out crowd at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Des Moines, Iowa, the University of Iowa's star guard, Caitlin Clark, broke the NCAA, or National Collegiate Athletic Association, women's all-time scoring record during a game against the University of Michigan. When the night began, Clark needed 8 points to move past a record of 3,527 points that was set by WNBA, or Women's National Basketball Association, star Kelsey Plum, while she was a player at the University of Washington from 2013 to 2017. Minutes into the game, Clark broke the record in signature fashion, making a deep three-pointer from near the midcourt logo. She ended up scoring a career-high 49 points in her fourth-ranked team's 106-89 win over unranked Michigan. Her career total by the end of the game was 3,569 points. Afterward, Clark said she was very grateful and thankful to be surrounded by so many people who've been my foundation in everything I've done since I was a young girl. Clark, who grew up in West Des Moines, Iowa, helped lead Iowa to its first NCAA National Championship game last season. She has set numerous records, including being the first Division I NCAA player to record 3,500 points, 1,000 assists, and 850 rebounds over the course of a career. Plum may have held the NCAA women's scoring record, but two female Basketball Hall of Famers racked up more points in their college careers. Lynette Woodard scored 3,649 points while playing for the University of Kansas from 1978 to 1981, and Pearl Moore, who played for Francis Marion College from 1975 to 1979, scored 4,061 points in her career. Women's teams did not start joining the NCAA until 1981, so Woodard and Moore are not part of that record book. Pete Maravich, who played at Louisiana State University from 1967 to 1970, and later in the NBA, the National Basketball Association, holds the all-time NCAA scoring record with 3,667 points. Clark, who is a senior, is likely to surpass Maravich's and Woodard's totals by the end of the season, which may be her last playing college basketball. And the information bubble is, did you know? The first women's college basketball game was played in 1893 at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. And the sidebar is big day for NBA star. On February 13, former NBA star Shaquille O'Neal became the first player to have his number retired by the Orlando Magic. He played for the team from 1992 until 1996. His number has also been retired by the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers. And in this week's Winners, we have pro basketball. During the NBA All-Star Weekend, the NBA's Steph Curry and the WNBA's Sabrina Ionescu faced off in a one-on-one three-point shooting contest on February 17. Ionescu scored 26 points, as many as any NBA player in the regular three-point contest that night, but Curry won with 29. I think a night like tonight shows a lot of young girls and young boys that if you can shoot, you can shoot, Ionescu said. In auto racing, William Byron of Hendrick Motorsports won the first Daytona 500 of his career on February 19. It is regarded as the biggest race on the NASCAR circuit. And in club soccer, in England Women's Super League, WSL, action on February 17, Arsenal beat Manchester United 3-1. There were 61,160 people in the stands at Arsenal's Emirates Stadium, setting a new record for the highest attendance at a WSL match. And we'll finish up with around the world. In Chilgok, South Korea, a granny hip-hop group makes it big. A group of women in their 80s have gained popularity for their raps about farm life. The hip-hop group, Suni and the Seven Princesses, performed their first show at a local community center last year. They were originally watched by a few local people, but their fame has spread and they have now had nearly 80,000 views on YouTube. It feels like I'm getting younger, said the group's leader, Park Jeon-sun. I'm excited. In Kano, Nigeria, there's a food struggle. Prices in Nigeria are increasing at the fastest rate in nearly 30 years. Because of the rising cost of basic items, many people in northern Nigeria have started eating hard rice grains called afafata that are not usually used for human food. The grains are difficult to cook and eat, so they are often thrown away or sold to farmers to feed fish. But afafata is less expensive than normal rice, so people who are struggling to afford food have begun buying it. In Trinidad and Tobago, an abandoned ship leaks oil into the sea. A huge cleanup operation is taking place after an abandoned ship began leaking oil off the coast of Tobago. Authorities say the ship capsized or turned over as it was being pulled by another boat from Panama toward Guyana. The oil spill was first spotted on February 7, and by February 16, some of the oil had drifted more than 150 miles across the Caribbean Sea. In Kharkiv, Russia, the opponent of Putin dies. Alexei Navalny, a well-known critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, died on February 16 at the age of 47. Navalny had been imprisoned since 2021, and some international leaders said Putin was responsible for his death. In several cities, people gathered to pay tribute to Navalny. His wife, Yulia Navalny, promised to carry on his work. In Japan, the nation's economy drops in rankings. Japan has lost its title as the world's third largest economy. An economy is how goods and services are made, sold, and used in a country. Last year, Japan's economy got smaller. Experts think this is because its population is shrinking, which means there are fewer people spending and making money. Germany is now the third largest economy in the world after the U.S. and China, and Japan is in fourth place. In Delhi, India, farmers march toward capital. On February 13, thousands of farmers started marching toward India's capital, New Delhi, to protest against the government. They are demanding that officials set a minimum price for food crops, which would stop prices from dropping below that level when the farmers sell their goods. Some of the farmers were arrested, and the city was blocked off, so they could not enter. Well, that's all the time we have this week for the March 1, 2024 edition of the Week Junior U.S. This is Julianne, and have a great week.